ladies and gentlemen. I'm Henrik Kongen. This is Red Ice Radio. We are very glad to have you with us today. RedIce.tv is the website. Please check it out for more radio shows, videos, and our TV show, and of course, our busy news section as well. Well, today we're with us Andrew Anglin from the Daily Stormer. I don't think he needs an introduction, frankly. I think both friend and foe do know him by now, a very effective journalist that cover the kind of stuff that very few others do, at least in the humorous, in the way that he does it. And of course, there is a lot that we have on the plate today in terms of discussions to go into, from Trump to the alt-right to the recent MPI controversy, but also, of course, the attack on Ohio State University, the people there, by some of the feral Somalis population up there. And do believe me, I know the situation. We have them in Sweden, too. I think you guys recall the Australian 60 Minutes crew that were in the suburbs outside of Stockholm to cover how great immigration was. They were actually attacked primarily by Somalis, so it is for sure a problem. But Andrew, welcome to the show. Good to finally actually have a dedicated radio show with you. We had you, of course, on our TV show before, but we haven't had a chance to, I guess, sit down and spend two segments together. So thank you for coming on.
I'm very happy to be here, Henrik. I told you when you sent me the email inviting me, I said I've been waiting years for this. So I'm very happy to be here.
Sure, of course. No, it's great. It's great. Of course, you were on Lana's show before, and as I said, we had you on the TV show, and this seems like a perfect time, considering what happened in Ohio, you know, your home state, to actually address this issue. I haven't, frankly, actually, I embarrassingly have to say, I've been so busy, both after MPI and all the things that we have upcoming with live streams and live shows, that I have not actually been able to follow up on the Ohio situation. Can you break this down for I guess, the audience and me, actually, quickly, in terms of what actually happened?
Yeah, it was an 18-year-old Somalian refugee, and he was attending OSU. And he drove his car into a crowd and then got out and started stabbing people with a butcher knife. And then he was shot by a white police officer. No one died. A total of 10 people were injured. I think most of them were stabbed. I think the car, people kind of moved out of the way when he drove his car into him. So most of the people that were injured were stabbed. And he, this is what these people do. He had been, interestingly enough, he had been profiled in an OSU, I think it was the Lantern, which is the official OSU student journal, student newspaper, talking about, you know, how he was a good refugee and he was integrating and he was cooperating with the system, assimilating. And he was complaining, though, about that there weren't enough prayer rooms, okay? And when I first saw this, because I'm around these Somalians, you know, this is my city, and they won't tell you how many there are, but there's probably 100,000. I mean, they give you these different statistics. And, you know, a few years ago, they came out and said there was like 50-something thousand, but I think there's a lot more than that. I mean, these people breed like rats. And I think they play these games with statistics where it's like, well, some of them are not actually refugees anymore because we gave them citizenship, or, you know, the kids
wordplay, stupid.
Yep. Yeah, you know, mathemagics. But they, these people are everywhere, so I'm aware of the behavior patterns of these people, and they have like an extremely low IQ, like lower than even the new norms for mentally retarded. Like they have about a 60 to 65 average IQ. So I mean, it's the lowest IQ group in the world besides the Australian Aboriginals. I mean, these are not even like normal Negroes. So when I saw this, when I saw his attack, I said he probably just got the idea in his head and just did it right then. You know, just went and did it because like, I'm just going to do this right now. But it turns out he did post something on Facebook, but before he did it. But I mean, the way it's written on Facebook, it looks like it was done on a phone. So I think probably he made the decision to do this without any, prior, at least not more than an hour or so, of prior thought to it. And it's just like any of these people can just blow at any time. It's surprising that it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think average IQ, just looking at peripheral fast search here, Somalis, 68. And I think, what is the retardation? It's like 50 to 55. It depends on what level, of course, but actually goes up even up to 70, I believe. Mild mental retardation. Coupled that, of course, with, you know, some of these populations in northern United States, a lot of Scandinavians there and stuff. It's usually around, I don't know, 100 maybe, something like that. Very difficult for these people to integrate into our kind of society.
No, and they don't attempt to. I mean, there's like, of the first generation that refugees, there were like, they came over as adults, like 7% of them had jobs. This is a statistic from a couple years ago. You know, I've studied this before. I was kind of looking into it recently. I was going to write a big article about Somalians in my city and, you know, just my experience with these people. But they've taken over entire areas and they just create Somalia inside of these ghettos that they create. And they've taken neighborhoods that, you know, I mean, they first started coming in the mid 90s. I was born in 1984. So when I was, you know, pretty small boy, they started coming. They allegedly had a civil war. I say allegedly, it's like these people are always having these tribal wars and so on, but they used it as an excuse to just flood us with these people. The governor at the time was getting tax breaks for bringing these refugees in, or federal money rather, for bringing these refugees in and settling them in Ohio, mainly in Columbus, which is my hometown. And so they took over entire, I mean, you can just now, you can look at a map and say, well, of the city and say, well, this is Somalian territory, because nobody can live near them. Even the local, I don't know what you call them, indigenous Negroes cannot live with these people. And they're the ones who have to live the closest to them. And they can't get along with them at all. They hate them. I don't know if people, you know, I mean, you do, for in Sweden, they go to Sweden. Most people in the United States probably are not aware, unless they're from Columbus, Ohio, or from someplace in Minnesota, of what these Somalians are. They're not like normal blacks. They have a bulb-shaped head that looks like a gray alien, and these, I mean, it's a really weird face they have. It's like a triangle. And, you know, they have a completely different behavior pattern. I mean, actually, most of the people that come over from Africa, if they're from, like, Sierra Leone or something, these people are not – they don't act like American blacks. They're not, like, you know, super, super violent. I mean, they're stupid and they live on welfare and so on, but they're not so bad as the American blacks. But these Somalians are much worse, and they drive cars. I mean, I don't know how they're allowed to drive cars, but they just drive them and crash them. One time, family members, there were two crashes where a Somalian was responsible in my family within like a month and a half period. You know, these Somalians will just slam straight into you. And then, I mean, like, it's like they don't even try to drive correctly. And, I mean, you have to run into them at gas stations, you know, and they're just horrible, these people. They make this noise. Their language is like some kind of, I guess it's a little bit influenced by Arabic, but it's like a totally tribal language. I don't think most of them can read it, but when you go to the BMV, they have Somalian language in all government buildings, I think, now in Columbus. They have Somalian language written on signs.
Amazing. I remember actually just a quick anecdote about this. I actually, many years ago, I was kind of interning at this kind of a government program to try to learn foreigners coming to Sweden, have them learn Swedish, right? So I handled like the computer class for some of these people. And I think those were the most difficult just to communicate, convey the idea about how the computer operates. So, for example, when you move the mouse, you know, on the mouse pad or whatever, that reflects the movement of the mouse on the screen. And some of these Somalis were unable to communicate the methodology of how a computer works to them. Very fascinating. And it was, you know, this is causing tremendous amount of problems because these comes to our societies. In a country like Sweden, we have a very high education level. I think actually in Sweden, the most of the young adults there, they go to school longest period of anyone in the world almost. And so they have a ton of education behind them. And for us to integrate these people into that educational system and then get them into the workforce is basically close to impossible, which means that many of these people are just left outside of the workforce and are just ending up living on welfare. And I would assume it's the same in the States then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these people have been there for decades, and there's nothing going on. I mean, I've never seen one behaving normally. I mean, you don't see them, like, you know, working at a normal job. Sometimes you see them, like, you don't even see them, like, working at McDonald's or Taco Bell or something, like, at the drive-thru. The only jobs they're going to be working are, like, sweeping floors. I mean, they're really just the epitome of the stupid non-white immigrant. I mean, it's like anybody who talks about this race doesn't exist. You can look at two groups of people. You can look at Somalians, and you can look at the Aborigines, the Aboriginals of Australia. These are, like, you can't even really say that they're, like, the same species. I don't know why Somalians, you know, I mean, there's probably some kind of explanation for it, but I don't think anybody's really researched it, why they're so much different than the rest of the Africans. I guess it's some kind of inbreeding, you know. I mean, these tribes over there, whatever they got going on, they were probably obsessively inbreeding to create this weird look that they have and this behavior.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of tribal warfare there, as you said. That's been, of course, one of the reasons why they've been exported to so, you know, many other countries. I think the, what was it here? I was just reading the fertility rate of the average Somali woman is about 6.56. That was measured in 2013. I mean, that's a lot compared to the Western world. And some of them, I've even seen some families that have like 13, 14, 15 kids. And despite this, it says, I guess this goes back to the statistics that you just mentioned. They claim there's about 85,000 Somalis in the U.S. That can't be right. It has to be more.
No, I think there's that many in Columbus. I mean, probably. There's, you know, they're everywhere. And, you know, but they gave us numbers like from 2012 that they said close to that. Well, not close to that. I think they said 50-something or 60. And I'm not looking at it in front of me right now. But, I mean, it's just everybody says it's a lie. Everybody knows that it's a lie. And there's like 100,000 of these people in Columbus, Ohio. This is the number that everybody that lives there kind of is working with on the ground. I mean, the other thing about these Somalians is it's like, they're totally useless. When you look at it, you're like, the only reason you would bring these people into your country is if you were trying to destroy the society. So it's like with the, you know, with the Mexicans, or with the Indians even, well, I mean, probably the Indians more than the Mexicans, you know, they're working these low jobs, these low paying jobs. The Indians come in and take away tech jobs and work them for lower wages. The Mexicans do whatever. I mean, construction and working in restaurants and cleaning and so on. You know, these people actually, you can say, like, as a capitalist, from that perspective of, like, we need lower wages, that this makes some kind of sense to bring these types of groups into the country. But when it comes to these Somalians, all they do is live on welfare and commit crimes. They do nothing else. Like I say, I mean, you can, these statistics, it's like one in 10, less than one in 10 has ever had a job. They just all live on welfare. And you see them driving around in SUVs. I mean, I don't know, a lot of them sell heroin. I didn't even say this before. A lot of them in Columbus, Ohio are involved in this heroin trade as well.
I didn't know that there was that many in Ohio. I mean, I've heard of Minnesota, obviously, and it seems that these globalists, like, love to push the Scandinavian, like, Somali connection for some reason.
Yeah.
It's like an ultimate disaster. But I didn't know that there was that many of them in Ohio. So, I mean, is this – okay, so, I mean, this is – the situation that has occurred is kind of – it's fairly rare, but I've seen footage of these, like, stampedes in malls and stuff like that, which seems to be primarily driven by Somalis. Is this – are we going to see more of this kind of behavior now, do you think?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know how many more of them are going to be allowed in. Hopefully Donald Trump is going to remove these people. But, I mean, basically what they've done is create their own ghettos that they're expanding now. But they don't, I mean, you don't see these people all that often living in Columbus because you avoid them. I mean, there's intersectional places where especially they can hit you with their cars. you know, in places where the neighborhoods cross and you're going to be in an intersection and they're just going to run the light and just crash into the side of your car, which happens all the time. But, you know, I mean, they've created their own ghetto. So as far as, like, you know, mall stampedes, if that happens, probably nobody would even know about it because it would be at their own a mall where they're the only people there and probably the shops are owned by Arabs and Turks. And nobody even would be aware that that happened. A couple years ago, there was a big thing where they rioted when they were trying to get Section 8 housing, and there were like 100 positions open for Section 8 housing, and like over 1,000 Somalians showed up, and they started fighting and burning cars. You know, I mean, this is the most primitive country in the world, basically, Somalia. They have no government. The libertarian dream, they are living it in Somalia. But they, you know, the initiation of force, that is going on. But, yeah, so this is a primitive, I mean, these people are living in dirt on the ground. I mean, you see these pictures of Somalia, these people are actually living on the ground.
I mean, they have a tremendous problem, obviously, with Islam and some of these radical groups. I think it's Al-Shabaab. We've actually had a lot of people, the infiltration of Al-Shabaab into actually certain Swedish institutions and stuff. And you know, these, you know, naive Scandinavians seems to be utterly just completely devoid of realizing what this is or how dangerous this is or what these people are all about. And I think, you know, we've heard about other kinds of stabbings at malls and attacks. And I think it was one even in September. There were some Somalians that were attacking someone in a mall or something like that. I think there's going to be a tremendous, tremendous, you know, problem. Why do you think he was? Has anything come out of why he was like radicalized or how this was done? Because it was a Muslim thing, right?
Yeah. It was. He left that Facebook post where he said he started talking about Burma. I mean, what is that even? It must have been something, Burma. I mean, who would even think of Burma? And what does the United States have to do with Burma? I don't know. I mean, they might have something to do with Burma. I actually have no idea. But, I mean, it's mostly a Buddhist thing going on in Burma where they're sick of the behavior of these Muslims. But he started talking about Burma, and I said he must have watched something in a class. I mean, he's at OSU. He must have watched, because who even hears about Burma? I mean, this Burma situation has been going on forever. It's not something that people are sitting around thinking about Burma. So that's what he wrote in his post. I don't know. He probably watched ISIS videos or something. I mean, they're all obsessed with Islam because, you know, they're very primitive people, and this appeals to these people. And, I mean, when you bring a foreign group to live among a population that is totally different than them, they're going to bond together and hate everybody who's around them.
Yeah.
Unless they're white people, because white people don't ever hate anybody. But, you know, I mean, maybe this is a problem, but actually, but they will bond together. And, you know, the Islam kind of helps with that. And that's one of the reasons they probably refuse to learn the language. You know, they just look at everybody else as an other. And, yeah, I mean, it's surprising. It does not happen more often. I mean, it does happen. They shoot a lot of people, but it's usually, like, drug-related or just some kind of thing in a parking lot where they shoot somebody and nobody knows why. I mean, that stuff happens virtually every week in Columbus, Ohio.
No.
But they're horrible, and they destroy neighborhoods. And it's like as soon as you know, my family works in real estate, so property and so on. And, you know, as soon as a Somalian moves into a neighborhood, it's like, well, that's over.
Because they're just going to bring a neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Like literally the everybody starts trying to sell and the property prices collapse because nobody wants to be around these people. And they bring them all. They can bring, I mean, they can drive down the price of a property by moving into a neighborhood, and then everybody wants to get out, so then they can move in, and the people that own these apartment complexes are forced to work with the government at that point to you know, like government housing, Section 8 deals with the government. So, I mean, this is a pattern of they've just expanded and taken over the city.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, obviously they would be, as you said, just to kind of hammer that point a little bit, they would feel by default as outsiders because of the fact that they won't be be able to come into and integrate into society. So they will literally create like a society within the society. We have the same problem in Sweden, and it's not only Somalis, it's many other groups. But the fact is that this will make them feel alienated, and it'll make them feel as outsiders, which is very likely why some of these people are drawn even more to radical Islamic ideas, because they were like they're grappling and reaching for some kind of anchoring, really, some kind of root, something that ties them to their identity. And frankly, I understand that. I mean, that's a human drive. But the viciousness of this comes into the fact that there's someone lobbying to bring these people into Western countries and think that somehow this is going to turn out good. I mean, it's insanity.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody actually thinks that. I mean, when you see the Somalians, anybody who's around these people, they're like the Zerg. It's a good analogy there. They're
what
like
was
a
that again?
Sectoid. This is from StarCraft.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, that was a long time ago since I played that. Yeah.
Yeah, an insectoid alien race. But, right. Yeah, no, nobody can say that they're offering benefit to society, and they just keep coming. I mean, they just keep coming in. They keep bringing more and more and more of them in, and they're reproducing. And, I mean, nobody can explain why you would bring people. Because why? I mean, that it's the only thing you can say is that it's sad that they're poor. So you have to bring them into your country and let them live on welfare. And this is like a nonsense type argument. It's sad that they're poor, so we're going to just destroy our city, our society, because it's sad that they live in this poor country.
Right.
That's insane. I mean, there's poor people all over the world. So based on this logic, you would have to bring everyone in the world into the United States. Like
they're trying, aren't they?
Groups,
they're trying.
They are trying, yeah. With these other groups, though, you can come up with some kind of argument. You can say, well, these Mexicans, they're doing the jobs Americans don't want to do. And, I mean, businesses at a certain high level, they are benefiting, at least in the short term, with driving down wages, or they have
yeah.
benefited in the short term with driving down wages by bringing in all these people from Mexico. So you can look at that and say, well, this is why they're doing it. I understand there's a logic to that these big companies lobby the government. They want open borders because they benefit from this cheap labor. With Somalians, the only possible reason you could do it is because you're trying to destroy society.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. You know, this is not going to end well, and I think we're just seeing the beginning of this now. What do you think, though? Let's get into Trump a bit here, and let's speculate a bit about what he can actually achieve in these kinds of situations, in these kinds of scenarios. I mean, he was the one who actually addressed, radical Islam. He actually brought it to the surface. He talked about it, and thankfully people loved the fact that he was addressing this kind of stuff and immigration and really tried to tackle some of these issues. Where do you think he's going to go on when more and more of these kinds of attacks are going to occur, and there's going to be, I mean, it seems that the attitude of mainstream liberal America right now is basically, we can't by name kind of single them out. We can't assume that they are going to, you know, be terrorists or commit any crimes, because if we do that, we alienate them. And at that point, they will turn on us and they will bomb us, basically. So they like, just shut up about it. Don't say anything. Don't bring any attention to it. And it's just going to go away. That seems to be kind of the mainline strategy right now of how to deal with this issue.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the thing. They keep saying that if you say anything negative about Islam, that you're helping terrorism and you're encouraging terrorism. So if you hurt their feelings, they will kill you. And this is what they said. Donald Trump is helping ISIS by saying he doesn't want more Muslims in the United States. Because
right.
if you stop them from coming in, then the ones that are already there will kill you. I mean, this is like, wow. I mean, that kind of logic, this was crazy to me, because it was like, it wasn't just one person said that, which would be bad enough. It was like the whole media at the same time was like, if you don't let more of these people in, then the ones who are already here will kill you because of it. So, you know what I mean?
Well, see, so wow. they think they're preventing terror. That's the way that they're going to deal with terrorism. Just bow down and do anything they want, right? To bend over,
yes.
and they won't kill us. No, problem solved, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is the bottom line of the reasoning that they are presenting. And, I mean, you know, if these people are so so unhinged that if you do something that hurts their feelings, they'll just all of a sudden start killing people randomly, these terrorist attacks where they just go and randomly kill people, then probably you should not have any of those people in your country. I mean, it's the most obvious thing. You know, Muslims, it's like, what is the benefit of these people? What do they provide to society? Muslims, I mean, we talked about Somalians, that's the most extreme, but just generally, Muslims, are they benefiting our society? Can anybody really make that argument?
Yeah, why seriously? Why do they need to be? It's almost when you hear the rhetoric of mainstream media and these progressives, it's like they have to be in America. We have to continue to bring in more Muslims for some reason. I haven't heard it being legitimized or a reasoning behind it. It's just we can't possibly keep them out. We have to bring them in.
Yeah.
What's the reasoning?
There is no reasoning. Just that we will call you a racist, which is the worst thing anybody can be called, if you don't accept it. So you have no choice to accept it, or we will, if you don't accept it, we will call you names. And this is, I mean, with Donald Trump, we finally broke through this because he was just like, what? You know, what? So, I mean, we got to the point where we can now talk about this, and you can say openly, like, well, what are these people doing here? I mean, this guy who drove his car and stabbed these people at OSU, he could be sent home. I mean, he is not a given, I mean, they can all be sent home. This stupid thing of you can't possibly remove them, every single one of these people who is not white can be sent home from the United States. That is physically possible, and it wouldn't even really take that long. But
don't they want to leave already now when Trump has gotten in? He's somehow, they think he's going to deport people already, so they're thinking about leaving some of them, I guess. I don't think they would, though.
Yeah.
They just talk, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like Lena Dunham saying she was going to leave. I mean, I think they're going to try and get all they can before they're forced out. Some of these people, to get some of these people out, Donald Trump, I mean, he would have to work with Congress, and there had to be a process and so on. But this visa that this guy had, who stabbed up the kids at OSU, he could just be sent home, I mean, like immediately. Donald Trump could sign an executive order to strip that class of refugee visa, and he could just say, well, hey, buddy, you got to go back to Somalia, you know? Maybe read up on some libertarian literature, and you can start a private road business. you're no government country. That group of people could be sent home. He's talked about sending home he says he's promised he's going to do it immediately. Round up 2 to 3 million illegal Mexican criminals and send them home. So there are things that he can do to get rid of these people immediately that don't require congressional approval or any kind of government process to just do it. And a lot of these Somalians, I mean, they've given a bunch of them citizenship now. So obviously that creates another level of technical details that you have to deal with to get rid of these people. But a lot of the Muslims can just be sent home. A huge percentage of all these people can be sent home.
Yeah, I think Trump, hopefully he made a smart kind of a word play, I guess, when he did that. After he won the election, he did an interview with 60 Minutes, and, you know, they were like, that was one of the central questions that the interviewer there, whatever her name is, I forget, what Leslie Stahl or whatever the hell her name is.
Yeah, she was horrible.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. She was like pressing him on this issue of immigration and like, oh my, or these illegal immigrants, what are you going to do and how are you going to deport these people? And then he started talking about, you know, well, the criminals, like those that are criminal. And my reasoning when I heard that was, well, by default, a criminal would be an illegal immigrant. Right? I mean, that's the very aspect that they're here in the U.S. illegally that makes them a criminal. So by even his own definition, that should mean he should be able to send all of them home because they've entered into the country under false premises. And all he has to do is basically create the the legal incentive, willpower and direction of the government of saying, no, these people did it wrong, they have to go back, and then they can, you know, as I think he said something like, they can apply from the outside or something like that, whatever, but the point is, they have not followed the rules, and hence they are criminals, right?
Yeah, no, what he's talking about is ones who have committed crimes other than the immigration itself, that have committed crimes and are being held, you know, in sanctuary in the United States, just allowed. I mean, they arrest these people and then just release them.
I know, it's
amazing. Don't support them. So what he's talking about is doing a roundup, like a mass roundup, like kicking in doors, you know, at 3 a.m., pulling people out of bed in their underwear and throwing them in a black van, getting them on a train back to back across the Rio Grande. I think he's going to do that. What you would do after that, though, I mean, in practical terms, is start giving serious fines to both businesses that hire them and put people that rent to them.
Yeah.
Because if they can't get jobs, they don't have any place to live, they have to go back. And then after you did that second step, then you could go in and round up any stragglers. But I mean, if you require documents to work, I mean, besides, like, you know, maybe some guys at the Home Depot, they'll pick them up in the parking lot to help them with the drywall or the landscaping. But I mean, I would even send out, you know, find the people who are picking them up in Home Depot. Just send some cops out there to Home Depot. But, I mean, the ones who all these businesses, these major businesses hire illegal immigrants. They're allowed to. I don't know. I mean, it's illegal, but they're allowed to do it. They don't get punished for doing it. So, if you stop that from happening, most of these people are going to actually self-deport. I mean, the Jewish media keeps attacking that term, self-deport, but this would absolutely happen. I mean, what are you going to do if you can't work, you don't have a place to live, unless you're involved in, you know, drug trafficking. But most of those people will be shipped out in the first wave of 2 to 3 million.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder, you know, if Trump starts addressing this, and let's assume that there will be, let's assume the media is correct and that there will be more terrorist attacks. Obviously, the media will blame Trump and say that it's his fault. He's creating this with his rhetoric or whatever. And obviously this would turn up the heat on this kind of conflict, which I think is kind of inevitable at some stage anyway, it seems like. But it would be, you know, it might be tougher in the short term, but in the long term, this would be something which is much more beneficial. I mean, I've always held the view that, you know, these multiculturalists and these progressives that are pushing this kind of society that we're seeing developing now, that is the society that's going to lead to bloodshed and terror and bombings and just horrible, you know, crimes and slaughters and terrors. And what we're advocating is separation and people to have their own nations, which is going to, you know, be much more difficult for people to, over ethnic and you know, other levels, find ways to fight with each other. I've always seen this as the peace solution, if you will, and theirs as the war solution. What do you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we see this already. You don't have in ethnically homogenous countries, you do not have these levels of violence. I mean, you do in black countries and Arab countries because these people just like killing each other, but you don't have that in any white countries that are left. You don't have people killing each other and blowing each other up. You know, why would they do that? What would be the point of doing it? I mean, any kind of conflict is either over resources. Well, I mean, it's pretty much also always going to be over resources, unless it's some kind of nonsense thing. But I mean, these ethnic warfare, these are competing genetic groups, competing for control of the society to inflict their will on the group that they're occupying. So, I mean, that's what, when you have these Pakistani, they call them grooming gangs in England, where they get these little girls and put them in sex slavery and are trafficking them around. I mean, this is a,
Kebab Gate.
yeah. This is a way of attacking the social order of the foreigners and humiliating the men.
Yeah.
Humiliating the men in the society that we're going to take your daughters and, you know, pass them around and just, you know, I mean, the stuff that they do to him, you can read Countercurrents. There's a few very good articles on there detailing what these Pakistanis were doing to these girls. I don't even want to say it.
Yeah, sodomites, the worst sadists, worst fucking atrocities ever, you know, disgusting.
And these little girls are, 11, 12 years old, and they're doing these gangbangs. It's just horrible stuff. And this is a way to humiliate the men. And this is what, that cologne, and when they do this Tarouche. This is to humiliate the men. Like, we are assaulting your women in front of you, and you are doing nothing. And on a biological level, men should be able to understand that. Like, these are our women. These women belong to us, and they are violating our women in front of us. This is the most demeaning, degrading thing that any group can do to another group, just on a very basic, primal level. And everybody should be able to recognize that. But with feminism and the emasculation of men and this brainwashing program that men have been through, they're not seeing that. But whether they recognize this or not, we are in a hostile situation. We are in a race war situation all over the Western world because we have flooded ourselves with these people that are intent on conquering us. And you always have to go back and blame the Jews. Because it's the Jews who created this social cultural paradigm that makes this okay, and in almost everywhere, it's the Jews who are actually engaged in the process of bringing these people into our countries. But even if the immigration groups and the laws that are being passed are not all run by Jews, which the laws passed by Jews in the United States, they all have been. But these people try and play a game with you, like, oh well, there's this country where there's no Jews, but they running the government, but they still have a high level of. I think Sweden.
You're right about that. It's the morality that has been pushed into cultural dialogue. I mean, we had David Schwartz, for example, who was one of the prominent Jews in Sweden that in the 70s started to put. I think it was even 60s. I'm not sure now. I'll have to look that up again. But he was basically pushing this in the media, and despite the fact that a country like Sweden only has, like, I think only like 20,000 Jews or something, I mean, there's a tremendous overrepresentation of Jews in the media. Bonnier family, of course, they hold own the major publications and newspapers and printing and stuff like that, books, publications. But even these small-time paper, like small local podunk town papers that was like have been bought up by some of the bigger Jewish conglomerates. And so you can read about what's happened locally, like in the little town here and there in the paper. But then all of a sudden there's like every other week there's like a Holocaust story or like when the Jews came to this little town and stuff like that. Do any of these people care about this? It's like ridiculous,
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But they push that's my point, though. They push immigration as like a moral virtue in the media. That's my point.
Yeah, no, I mean, the whole new... you can just call it liberal, I guess, the whole new social paradigm that the Western world and cultural paradigm that the Western world is soaking in is entirely Jewish. So, this is what they sold to the Goyim, this new form of morality where the highest form of morality is to actually commit a genocide against yourself. Is ultimately what it is. I mean, you see this where it's very clear. And in Germany, I mean, I just posted a video of this German. He's a blonde German guy in his 20s or maybe early 30s who's teaching migrants how to seduce migrants, Somalians, Afghanis, Pakistanis, how to seduce German women.
Yeah, Mr. Flirt, okay? Right? But what's his name again? Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Horst Wenzel is his name.
Horst Wenzel, yeah. And the government is funding him to do this class. And the government gives out I think Lana made a video where the government gives out these documents showing immigrants how to impregnate white women.
Yep.
I mean, they have these pamphlets that have the black penis going into the white vagina and impregnate semen coming out and showing the baby inside. They printed these documents and handed them out to the immigrants. So, you know, I mean, this what is going on here?
Yeah.
This is an actual attempt to genocide the German race.
And what he's doing, and this is an excellent point, but what he's doing, Horst Wenzel here, is basically he's trying to basically give them a code of how to get these women in bed, meaning, you know, you have to adapt a little bit to our culture so that they will basically open up to you and open their legs, right? So it's like an incredibly sly way of making sure that these women are immediately accepted, and so that these guys are, for example, maybe not coming on as strong or something like that. I don't know, but they would probably like that anyway, right? Because most of the Western men are emasculated at this point anyway, so they would probably. I mean, some people even argue that like reasons why many of these feminists are pushing some of this stuff is because on some level, subconsciously, they want some of this. I don't know if that's true, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, by some of these feminists anyway.
Yeah, no, I absolutely believe that it is true. That they you know, I mean, feminism is a demand for men to become men and, you know, put them back in line, because women have been put in a position where they can't reproduce as they're supposed to by the feminist, you know, system, where they're supposed to go to college and go get jobs and all this, when it's just a basic biological fact that they should be producing children. I mean, they should be. I mean, basically, a woman is going to be pregnant, you know, at 16, 17, maybe even earlier, and they have a drive to do that. It's a biological drive to reproduce. So when you tell women, well, maybe you can get married when you're 30, maybe. I mean, this is way after peak fertility, and I think it drives women a little bit insane. And I think there is a subconscious drive to return to some kind of more natural setting. And I think that it's very clear that they view these Arabs as and blacks even as representing something more close to the natural order. And I think that's why you have all these women. I mean, it's at least a part of why you have all these women out there protesting for these mass this invasion and saying, you know, I'm a feminist, but I also want Muslims, because that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any logical sense on the face of it, that you're a feminist, but you also support Islam. That's like an insane type statement.
Yeah, so, exactly. Well, Andrew, I mean, this is, I guess, it's also been one of the more controversial things, I guess, you've been talking about on the sites. I know that some people have charged you that, you know, you don't like women for this reason, and obviously I think everyone has their head screwed on right can see that feminism is a problem or whatever. But there's been some back and forth whether or not this is, you know, women's fault or whatever. We had, for example, that video by, was it the Black Pigeon Speaks, that kind of went into this a little bit. That video went all over the place, and there was a lot of pushback on that kind of mentality as well. But is there anything you'd like to, I guess, say about that, or is there a way that we can still, because I see that there is a, obviously, a relationship that we need to start developing with our women to have be on equal foot, not equal footing, but we need to be understanding of the fact that we can work together to take care of this problem, instead of, you know, basically having issues that drives the wedge deeper between us and creates an even more rift. That's what I mean.
Yeah, no, I get accused of, quote, hating women, which I don't even know. This is like a type of nonsense statement. No, I do not hate women. I am very appreciative for women. I like women. I have a girlfriend. I have a very good relationship with my mother. I don't have any specific issue with women, which people suggest that I have some kind of personal problem here. But no, my view on women is that we had the correct balance between the genders before feminism. So, you know, I mean, basically men have the same opinion of women. If you go back 100 years and then you go back to the beginning of recorded history, and then you go back to the caves before that, you're going to have pretty much the same view of women, which is not hatred for women. I mean, to say that there was a thousands of years or millions of years, if you go back to, you know, the invention of language, a conspiracy against women is totally nonsensical. My view on women is that they have a specific role to play in society that is different than the role that men play in society, and I think that they should be, you know, in the home. They should be mothers. And so, I mean, when you get into the political realm and you have women involved in politics, I think it can be maybe problematic on some level, because that's not something that women are naturally interested in. So I think that, you know, it can be something where people put too much focus on this idea that, well, we got to get women into politics. And I said, well, you know, I mean, this is like a bunch of women saying, well, we've got to get men interested in shoe shopping. I think it's probably not something where you're going to have a bunch of women interested in radical, revolutionary politics. You know, all the journalists. So obviously, you're going to have some women. We do have some women. But all the journalists at that NPI, we should talk about NPI later. But
yeah, definitely.
All the journalists there were saying, "Where are the women? Where are the women?" But the fact is, women are not especially interested in this type of thing, and I think that's fine. It's natural for women not to be especially interested.
And still, there was quite a bit of women there. Actually, it was like they were blind. Some of these journalists, you know, majority men, obviously, but you know, they were there. It's like amazing.
Yeah. No, yeah. So, you know, I don't have any issue with women. There's a lot of hyperbole and satire and so on my website. And I think that people take that and say, well, this guy supports beating women.
Right.
This type of stuff. And no, I do not support beating women. I do not hate women. I think that women are much happier in a traditional social order where they're at home. They're mothers, they're having kids and taking care of the kids, and not trying to pretend to be men. Basically, what the Jews have said to women is that you're defective men. You just need to become more like men, repair yourself from your femininity and become a man. And I don't think this is insulting to women to say that femininity is a negative thing, and that, you know, they have to become masculine, they have to become, you know, men. They have to become like men, that everything is pushing them into this role. And I don't think that women are being asked whether or not this is what they want. And I think that the what feminism has done is feminize the male space. By bringing all of these women into the male space, we feminize the male space, and we feminized boys by making them have to conform to female standards. You've got this woman here, it's going to change the behavior of men, and when you then have women in all male spaces, it changes the entire ability for men to function as men. And, you know, I mean, women still have their own spaces that men don't get involved in. But women have been shoved into all the places where men traditionally were able to have their own space and be dominant in their own environment. So I think that shoving women into all these things had overwhelmingly negative outcome, and I think it's something that needs to be reconsidered, because this is been shown not to be helpful for society. And just like we were talking about the women, the men have been so feminized that the women don't even, they're not even attracted to them anymore. Because this is what feminism has done, this gender reversal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's not been good for anybody.
No, exactly. I mean, you're right. Millions of years of evolutionary paths where we've developed roles and functions, which is, you know, biologically and genetically tied, and for women that means fulfilling the most important role that there is, which is the continuation of our people, of our folk. It's the most noble task that there is, and it's just unbelievable that, you know, the propaganda and the psyops has been so strong, so powerful, that this very biological function they've managed to turn on its head, and now they're walking in the opposite direction. So, yeah, absolutely extraordinary. But Andrew, we're going to take a break here in just a little bit, and of course we're going to continue to talk more after that. We're going to talk about Trump, what to do now when he is in office, or is this recount issue actually going to go anywhere? We'll talk about the role of the alt-right, you know, post-Trump NPI, and much more like that. But tell people a bit more about your website. I don't think there's many that listens that are new to it, Andrew, but tell us a little bit about it anyway, and if there's a way that people can help you out and support to make sure that you can continue to do the work that you do.
Yeah, my website is dailystormer.com. I get you saying the Daily Stormer, but it's dailystormer.com. People can donate, but not really. You pretty much have to mail me money because all my stuff has been cut off. Bitcoin, people can send me Bitcoin, but I don't really have any way to fund the site because I've been banned from everything because of the Jews.
Ouch. That shows we need our own platforms. Actually, let's talk a bit about censorship too in the next segment here, in terms of what's happening right now with Twitter and where this is going to go. They've been thinking about banning Trump, I guess. I mean, this is retarded. They're just going to crash their own. This is just going to go into the toilet for Jack there. But let's take a short break here, folks, and we'll return shortly. And of course, if you do want to support what we do, if you like our show, definitely sign up for a membership with us. That's a great way of supporting us and ensuring that we can continue doing what we do. And most of the second hours that we do of these radio shows are available in the members segment. We also, of course, have the weekend live show that you can watch exclusive for members. And then, of course, we do a lot of public live streams as well. So definitely keep an eye on those. We actually have, let me just mention that here too, right at the end, we have coming up here shortly a couple of live streams. We'll have more information on redice.tv/live about that from the Italian EU referendum. And then we're going to try to live stream the speech that Richard Spencer is going to do at Texas A&M as well. That might be interesting. But let's take a short break here, folks. Stay with us, Andrew. We'll be right back with the second segment.